Hi, everybody. I'm Tim. I'm an alcoholic. You can tell by my accent that Dan and I are not originally from the same hometown. I want to say a couple things to overcome my shaking stomach and battering knees. I'd like to thank Milton for asking me to speak and for the committee for their hospitality. I needed the time out of Birmingham on the mountain, and I'm glad I came. Milton means a lot to me. Go to that men's retreat in Iuka with him, and he helped lead the man who originally sponsored me into recovery. And it's a wonderful connection we have in this Alcoholics Anonymous family tree, where through these connections that can't be explained a lot of times in human terms, we have spiritual connections with people that we normally wouldn't ever get to know. And Milton's just been great to me and to my family over the years in lots of ways. I like this conference center. It's beautiful up here. Spiritual, simple. Food was great, and I sure appreciate the good meals we've been served, and people are friendly, and nice group of folks. If the guys in Birmingham learn about these Unity women, you might have a lot more people coming next year. I was raised in a family that was kind of this typical post-war generation. I think it's the same one that Mike's in. When I came up here, I didn't want to come and give this talk. And Milton knows I tried to escape a couple times, and so do some other people. Somebody said, well, go because maybe somebody there needs to hear something you have to say, which that appeals to my egotistical side. But of course, what happened was I heard what somebody else had to say last night and earlier in the day. And, you know, that's why I was here. I got gifts far greater by coming here than anything that I could dispense. It always works that way if I shut up and pay attention. That was a great talk. And many of the issues that you raised are huge, and some of our similarities you'll see are interesting. But my dad and mom were from Buffalo, New York, and I was born in 1951. And when I was six, after the war, Second World War, my family moved to South Florida with a lot of people that moved after the war. So I always felt a little displaced. I wasn't raised around a lot of family. I have a brother and sister. They're both alcoholics. My brother's now dead after addiction and lung cancer. My sister's now recovering. And we had a recent experience with her that also reflects how deep the disease can be. She called me recently and said that God had sent her to carry a message to the world about how bad hell was, and that the TV was turning itself on and off to religious programming. And I realized that she had reached out to me during a massive alcohol withdrawal while she was having hallucinations, and that she felt I was the only person she was safe to talk to and understand. And from Birmingham to Florida, we got her the help she needed, and now she's back on the path. But when you're talking to the face of this disease over the phone in your own family, it's a stunning and amazing thing. Which brings me to another thing I want to talk about is these other fellowships that are represented here. I love Al-Anon. I love Al-Anons. And I'm glad to hear Al-Anon speakers and to have Al-Anon friends, because we got some good Al-Anon folks in Alabama. And I was telling Percy and his wife about some Al-Anon stuff. I remember one Al-Anon woman at Huffman leaned over the podium and said, well, to all you alcoholics, if you're a loved one of an alcoholic, you qualify. And that makes me realize that there's a lot of issues there too for me. fact, the best talk I ever heard was by Al Ateen. And I'll give you the whole, I'll give you their whole talk. It was during an Al Ateen sharing session at Gulf Coast Jamboree in the early part of 87, right after I'd gotten sober. They got this little girl up there, country looking girl. And, they bent the microphone way down and they said to her, they do a sharing session where, you know, as you know, Al Anon kind of sponsors Al Ateen. And the Al Anon was asking questions gently of this little girl. And they said, "What do you like about Al Ateen?" And in six sentences, this little girl summarized three fellowships that are represented in this room as our way of life. She looked up and she said, "I love AA because my daddy doesn't drink anymore. I love Al-Anon because my wife, my mother's not as angry as she used to be. And I love Al Ateen because I'm happier than I've ever been." And I thought, well, I've heard a lot of AA BS over the years, but that's a lot. That's a lot of talking in six sentences right there. And I hope I say something half as meaningful in the few minutes I'm going to take today to share what's happening with me. So we moved to South Florida. Two drunks in the family. Didn't discover it for a while. I didn't drink till I went away to college. First time I drank hard, got drunk, got bloody, got sweaty, got cut, blacked out, puked, loved it. The drunks understand. Wanted to experience it again. Did as often as I could under the circumstances, and it too affected my career, although I wouldn't have told you at the time. I'm 15 hours short of my bachelor's degree because of alcoholism, although it took me years to say that that was the truth. The fact is that as a child, although Bill says we shouldn't study our alcoholism as to whether or not we got this way because our mother put us the wrong way on the toilet, the fact is I was probably spoiled. I think my parents in the post-war generation were going to do some things for the children that were going to be different because they were children of the Depression and they had gone through the war. And I think I was overprotected. I think as a result of that, there is some kind of emotional immaturity in me that I could probably spend hundreds of millions of dollars on analysis studying, but AA pretty well described it when I finally got here. And what it was selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. And it was this, what they called an egocentric core that brooked no opposition from God or any other authority. And they told me when I got here that I would fight to the end to keep that. In other words, when you cut all the baloney out of it, I was playing God because it was the only way I had figured out to protect myself because I was not forced to take responsibility for my behavior in an adult, mature way because I was being spoiled by this protective cocoon I was in. Some people would say it was abusive. Some people would say it wasn't, blah, blah, blah. It doesn't matter. The fact is, as our speaker last night said, I ended up with that feeling that many alcoholics have of just being different from everybody else and not knowing how to operate in a world of people. And as far back as I've ever inventoried, I have found that. So I get to college and get drunk. Well, now I found a way to get out of all that. And I also then began to exhibit the other great alcoholic quality of this dual personality thing, where I was an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. And I mean both to the extreme. I was either louder, prouder, crazier, or I was nothing, worthless, useless, and I could never reconcile the two when one got wrapped around the other. The literature calls it a narcissistic core, an egocentric narcissistic core. Now, Narcissus was a Greek god, who was handsome. And he looked, he wandered around, and all the little nymphs or Greek goddesses, women, liked him. And he wandered around, and one day he saw himself in a pond. And he fell in love with what he saw. And so he would sit and stare at the pond for days and days and maybe years and years. And finally a bunch of women got mad and came and killed him. I don't know the whole story, but that's kind of how it ended. Now, I used to believe that narcissists had fallen in love with himself. But that's not really true. What narcissists had done was fall in love with the image of himself. And that's what's happened to me, is that men and many other alcoholics I've heard about, is that over the years, unless I unsparingly survey myself, and during the times of drinking and then getting over drinking, I went through this gigantic cycle of believing I was one thing and knowing I was something else, but wanting to love the image that I saw, no matter how old narcissists got or how unreal it became. And that's not spiritual. That's selfish. So, I crash my way through school. Well, I get involved in politics during that era, the politics of the right. I was a conservative in a world when the Vietnam War had a lot of people going the other way. Typical of me. And I did all the things that guys like me do. I expressed opinions about things I had no experience in, blah, blah, blah. And I paid for that sometimes publicly. I was on a radio show in Miami, blabbing my mouth, and the phone rang on this talk call-in show, and a guy said, "Were you there?" And I said, "No." And he said, "Then you don't know what you're talking about." I think it was my father that had called. So I get out of school in 1972 to work in North Carolina in a campaign, came back to school. It was never the same. I never finished it. I was drinking now, doing the sofa circuit, living on people's sofas, working from campaign to campaign. I mean, that is not good, orderly direction. Now, I could tell you that it gave me a lot of life experience, that people say, "Oh, I wish I could have done that. I wish I could have worked in campaigns. You must have met all kinds of interesting people, blah, blah, blah." Not always. You know, it might have looked good. The image might have been there, but that wasn't the reality. And it gave me opportunities to drink in several states and to do a lot of crazy stuff like that, but it wasn't personal growth and development. It wasn't maturity. It wasn't how a 24, 25, 26, 27, 28-year-old man should live. It certainly wasn't developing character, although to some it was looking good. To me, it was looking good, but to the outside world, I mean, it was bad. So by the time I was 30, I did what a lot of self-respecting drunks do. I married a woman who had a regular job, and she lived in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and I moved into her condo, and then we had a baby right away, Katie, my daughter, our daughter. Right after that move, she moved to New Jersey, where she worked for the telephone company, and there was divestiture. Remember, they broke up the big telephone company into a bunch of small telephone companies. And I was doing consulting work. A consultant is a person who worked last year but doesn't presently have a job. And that's the kind of consultant I was. And held court in bars, and you know all this. And then after several years of that, I got bought out of a partnership on a telephone campaign company because I got drunk and didn't do my work and made bad business deals. And although we made money, I got none out of the business, and really trying to do the short form real fast here. And then we moved to Alabama. That's how I got to Birmingham, because my then wife, Carol, had a job at the phone company. This was in 1985. In early 1986, I made all those wonderful, sweet promises, the same promises that Bill Wilson made to Lois and sometimes wrote in the family Bible about how it would be different and how glad I was to be back in the South, because I love the South. I never lived up north, really, and I like Southern people way better than most Yankees I've ever met. And anyway, my mother was a Yankee and all that. But I made those sweet promises. It was all going to be different. I got hired by the Republican National Committee, and I commuted to Washington, D.C., and by plane out of Birmingham, and then for most of that summer and fall. That would be 86. On some weekends and some days when I was in town, I would drink coffee at the Ranch House Barbecue on Columbiana Road in Hoover and talk to this old fella named Clyde, who'd been a highway patrolman and so forth. And at one point late in the year, after I'd been arrested for a DUI in Washington and sent to driving school class while working for the Republican National Committee, he suggested that maybe my problems had to do with drinking too much, and did I want to go to a meeting with him? So I went to the Vestavia Hills group of Alcoholics Anonymous on November 24th, 1986. My last drink was sometime the night of November 22nd, 1986, which is what I call my sobriety date of my last drink. There's a bunch of people in a church basement smoking cigarettes, hugging each other, laughing, talking real loud. They went and they sat down. I saw the window shade. It said, "We admitted we were powerless over alcohol. Our lives were unmanageable." I don't believe I'd seen that before. When they called for people to say who they were there, I said out loud, "I'm Tim, I'm an alcoholic." Now that is very far from admitting to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic. But I finally said it, despite having therapy and other things before that never got me to admit it, say it, understand it. Now here's what I'm going to talk about. The simplicity, the directness, the practical nature of the AA program is the only thing that's caused it to have any chance of working in my life. If it had been theoretical, argumentative, or a million other options, I would still be theorizing, arguing, and drunk. But I didn't get the opportunity to do that. They just took me to a beginner's meeting and says, "You sit here, Max chair in the meeting, listen to what he says." And a bunch of people shared their experience in a circle. And then Clyde said, "We're going tomorrow night to Hoover." That's it. I saw there were 12 steps. I saw some God stuff in there and a few other things. But at that point, I was not willing to argue because I knew how bad it had gotten and was getting. And like some of my friends in AA say, I knew at that moment that the problem was not that I was going to die of alcoholism. I was 36 years old. The problem, I was going to have to live that way a long, long time in terror and shakes and sweats and fear and self-hatred and not knowing what was going on in this world and not living life and being rejected and being confused and throwing up and passing out and wrecking cars and blah, 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 blah. Terms I didn't even learn that other people knew until Clyde bought me my first book. And I read a book written by people who understood exactly how I felt and thought, and I heard people talk in meetings about it. Then we'd go to Shoney's and drink coffee afterwards. Took me a long time to come to believe that there was a power greater than me. My AA meeting was in the church where we went, and I knew I was so despicable that when I was asked to be an elder in the church, I said, no, not me, ask my wife. And so although I'd taught Sunday school and done other things like that, the key thing there was I was finding a spiritual program in a church basement. Picked a sponsor because he cleaned up ashtrays on his 9th anniversary. Because I said, well, if a guy's got all that time, instead of standing around having people pat him on the back, he's still doing service work. Cleaned up ashtrays and took tables, he must have something. took me a long, long time to say the third step prayer. I said it many, many times with other men on my knees next to those dirty, filthy sofas that are on the floor at Five Points South Clubhouse in Birmingham. If you've ever been there, it's ground zero for alcoholism in Birmingham, man. It's a filthy, dirty, nasty place full of drunks trying to get sober and help each other and crawling in off the streets and crawling back out, testing our patience while we try to run a respectable AA clubhouse. Oldest group south of the Ohio River, they say. Probably got the youngest average sobriety. I don't know what happens. I guess they get sober, marry an Al-Anon, and move to Hoover or something. At any rate, I went to Iuka a lot of times for these retreats, and that's where I did a step four. Mike finally made me do it, and I told it to him in the lodge up there. And I sat on that back porch overlooking that slough in that little house and spent my hour. Said my seven-step prayer. Oh, I was just rocking along. I'm talking several years. I was already working in the treatment center business by then. Worked in the treatment center business, never worked a step four. Malpractice. But my job wasn't to do therapy. It was to call out. When people called, I was supposed to say, what kind of insurance do you have? Come on in and let's talk about it. So didn't really have a regular job. I mean, worked for a year, then went back to politics, worked for a year, went back to politics, worked for a year, and it was just nutty, nutty, nutty. All right. I made amends as best I could from the list. You know, I read the book. I know the book. A lot of the adventures in the book. Remember we used to say, who's Mr. Brown? A lot of people don't know who Mr. Brown is. It's the example of resentment in step four. Mr. Brown, he paid attention to my wife. We had a clubhouse in Homewood once. We had a phone in the kitchen. I had a guy who used to call me all the time because he'd never work his step four. I wouldn't talk to him about it until he worked one. So every time he called me and bitched about something, I would say, who's Mr. Brown? Phone rang about 9:02. There was a newcomer woman standing in the kitchen. It was Terry. He started complaining about something. I said out loud, who's Mr. Brown? Out of the corner of my eye, I saw this woman go back to our meeting hall, and all of a sudden I heard her holler real loud, Mr. Brown, phone call for Mr. Brown. I said, go get her. Brought her back. She said, who is that? I heard you say that. And I said, no, it's code I'm talking. Oh, she said, I've embarrassed myself. I said, don't worry about it. They don't know who he is out there anyways. I want to get to the meat of what I've got to say in the few minutes I got left. This book has a lot of stuff about spiritual growth in it. This is the Sunday morning meeting, so this is the spiritual meeting. How do I start this? Let's start this way. I had a friend die within the last 2 weeks. We called him Cadillac Mike. Called him Cadillac Mike because he had a desire to fix up this Cadillac. And he worked on that thing in the parking lot at our clubhouse. Guys would bring parts and put them on and take them off, and it would slip off the jack and it would catch on fire, and they would come and fix it and it wouldn't run. And he worked on this car and worked on this car. So everybody in AA's got a nickname, you know. We have Tim, Black Tim, Tim the Fireman, Sharon, Big Sharon, Sharon with the Mole. there's AA nicknames. If your nickname's Crack Whore Terry, you have problems. So it's an amazing thing. Cadillac died gracefully with dignity. And we went to his apartment and had a memorial service for him. Now remember, I've skipped some steps there that I didn't talk about. It doesn't mean I didn't try to do them. I want to get to this before the time runs out. A group of people who normally wouldn't mix met. Some people who culturally would be screaming, hollering, and falling down sat and talked. Some people who were highly unemotional got emotional. And we shared our love, concern, and affection for Cadillac Mike. Some people who were intellectual or who were agnostic had moving experiences. I had one. I felt the Spirit. Now, I've been to a lot of funerals. I have my own personal opinion. I have my own religious problems. But while we were together with Mike in his apartment that night, I know I felt the Spirit. I know that the Spirit that's talked about in this book, that's been felt by others, that the book says we share how we develop a personal relationship with God, I know that Spirit is real. Now, the depth of that feeling I had at Mike's little service where we talked about his memory and where people talked about knowing that there is more to what we experience than this, I know it is real. Now, what's the book say about that? It says that spiritually, we are going to have trials and low times ahead. All right, let's talk about that one. In 1988, after 2 years of sobriety, my first wife, Carol, said, "You got to get out. It's homicide or suicide." So I left. I'm the one that told the little girl, who was five, "Daddy's going to live at this apartment." Forever? No, not forever. Well, it wasn't forever. She's 24. She's fine. The relationship's worked out better than anybody could have arranged it other than God, all for all concerned in that deal. That was in 88. Lived in junky little apartments, went to meetings, had $2 in my pocket, drove a beat-up old rabbit that caught fire in the parking lot at Primary Purpose one night, worked, you know, didn't want to live. She moved to North Carolina right away with her mom. Now we're very close. Those who know her love her. Katie and is a great kid, and Percy knows her and others. So I wait all these years, and then I meet Diane, my Diane. After a year of dating, we break up, we get back together, she's an AA, I'm an AA, we decide that love and AA will make a marriage work. We get married less than a year later with four adult kids living in the house and us. Don't need to get into all the details. It kind of spiraled out of control. And I was out living in an apartment again. Now, that's not how I had this recovery thing planned. Now, well-meaning friends said, "Oh, it was just a mistake. Well, it just happened. Well, that ain't how I felt about it." I felt that I had committed an abject spiritual failure of action at the practical sense and inside. I questioned everything. The fact is, my expectations were high because after a period of sobriety, I felt more love than I felt in my early sobriety when I had masked all that with booze all those years. So the expectation was higher. Upon collapse, so was the depth of the hurt. I felt it was a failure of working steps. Well-meaning friends said, no, give time, do this, do that. And it's hard. Now, I look around, I see a lot of families put together in AA. I thought the first time I got divorced that's what it was. Whoa, wait a minute, this isn't supposed to happen. AA is supposed to save marriages, blah, blah, blah. Well, there's a lot of stuff in this book and in the other literature and in the other fellowship that was not done on a practical level to prepare for that kind of responsibility. I love the image, but I didn't really know the reality. Book says, the spiritual life is not a theory. We have to live it. Now, only a drunk would understand that that has even been questioned by a friend of mine who says, well, that's fine how it works, but I mean, how does it work in theory? Well, you know, AA understands it works just fine. How does it work? It's fine. It also says in there that those of us who have spent a lot of time in spiritual make-believe have to understand that we have to get to where our feet are on the ground because that's where our fellow travelers are. Well, you know, I could theoretically do lots of things, but did I take the practical action that this program calls for to get to where I needed to be, to handle what I needed to handle when it happened? Probably not. Did I beat myself up about it too much? Sure. Am I in self-pity? Sure. Is that selfish? Yes. Are you supposed to do self-pity and self-loathing and are supposed to watch for that daily? Yes. Do I? Yes. Does it work? No, it hasn't yet. Now, another thing it says is that my concern is supposed to be about the other fellow, and I'm taught about that from the very beginning, that even when I work with newcomers, the other man's interest are to come first, and that I'll walk with my new friend hand in hand in the spirit. Right. So what does this selfishness do to me? I'll tell you what it does, and this is the sermon part of today's sharing session. If it weren't for the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous, I wouldn't have made it through the last 2 years of mess, because my own ability to do the steps has somehow been horribly, terribly impaired. It was my friends in the fellowship who carried me along and said, do the best you can with steps. Don't beat up on yourself so much. Blah, 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 blah. Try this, try that. Come to a meeting. Let's go here. Let's go for coffee. Want a meal? Need some money? That's why AA is this three-part world of recovery based on the steps, which sometimes I can't work perfectly. It's the egomaniac in me that says I can work steps and the result will be happy, contented sobriety. Now that's playing God. That's saying I'm going to do the steps and I can predict for sure that the world will be the way that I want it to be. If I work the steps, I'll get what I want. Did you read the reflections today? It's thy will, not mine, be done. Now, second part of the three-part world of recovery is recovery based on the steps. It's unity based on the traditions. I love the traditions of AA. It's a protection against egomaniacs like me. Look around. Who runs AA? How do you elect the boss around here? Nobody. God does. It's true. That's why we have the spirit of rotation. That's why we have all these mechanisms. And I need to learn the traditions because the spiritual condition that results of traditions work through a home group is humility that I can't seek to advance myself either within the fellowship or in the world at large. How do you take I'm a political organizer. How do you take a person like that and say, in AA, you have no opinion on outside issues? And we don't care much about your opinion in meetings either. We'd like to hear your experience. Then, the third part is service. There have been times when it's been nothing but service that's kept me busy enough or focused enough on the fundamental important spiritual issues of this way of life because I couldn't get along with the people in my group. The traditions were making me crazy, and my personal recovery based on the steps was deficient and wanting. So it was talking to people who had problems worse than me, or it was raising money when it got stolen from the clubhouse, or it was raising money when Morris's salary wasn't paid properly into the IRS. So I would go down and we would work with the IRS to get Morris's taxes, he's our intergroup guy, paid off while my own taxes weren't paid. Now, if it takes recovery, unity, and service to keep a person sober, because any one of them couldn't, in my case, I had to have all three. Now I know why it says in here, remember, they are very ill. It's a three-part disease. It's physical, mental, and emotional, and so forth. I can't overcome my physical addiction to alcohol that started the first time I felt it. I can't even put an intelligent handle on the emotional part. But I certainly can do something about the spiritual part, but I don't get to decide what the outcome is. I just have to do the best I can in every area, just the best I can. Like the little girl said, Dad doesn't drink anymore. The second thing is I got to do the best I can for the fellowship. If I'm just a step Nazi and act like a jerk in my home group, don't have a home group, don't have a sponsor, won't get along with people, can't work with people, won't try to carry the message, express my opinions on everything, break my anonymity, won't participate in the service structure, well, what kind of whole person am I? Maybe that helps. And then finally, if I have no interest in the concepts and the money of AA and the business of AA, then I'm immature AA. I'm letting somebody else pay my bills, which is how I lived for many, many years and still try to as best I can. Thank God for AA. You know, when the spiritual part of this is that God is so unimaginably huge, so unimaginably loving, so real to many people that those who still play him or deny him know that somewhere we must somehow seek him. That the doctor's opinion says, well, you might come to scoff, but I hope you remain to pray. That the vision for you, the end of the vision for you, is clearly that we have a destiny. It doesn't say a destination. This isn't about going to heaven, the destination. It is about fulfilling our happy destiny, which is that thing now in this life as we know it, which gives us meaning or purpose. Now, as I bang my head against this, as I wallow in self-pity, as I go through my depression, as I wonder what this is all about, as I go through job changes, blah, 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 as I struggle with the collapse of relationships and all the stuff that I've described to you briefly, I must understand I don't get to choose my destiny. I just gotta keep trudging. And it ain't pretty sometimes. Now, I would like the whole world to be mountaintops and beautiful and blue sky. But after this weekend of rest and relaxation and fun, we're gonna drive back into the valley. Well, doesn't the valley make the mountain more interesting? And if I go back to Birmingham, as beautiful as it's been to have Birmingham in the rearview mirror and come up here, that's the reality. The real question is, can I man up to meeting my responsibilities? Do I want to be a mature AA, or do I want to just walk around in happy, happy land? You see them, if you've been in AA, they're wonderful. They come to meetings, they're on the clink cloud, they tell everybody what to do, they lecture, they moralize, it's all that. But without our experience from the past and our present experience, which becomes our greatest asset in helping others, what do we really have to share? I know God's real, that He is a spirit, that He is the spirit that connects us. I know that AA is a practical search for people who otherwise won't take instruction in how to make a connection with that spirit, both in spirit and in truth, without ever getting to impose it on other people, which is the political part. That I always wanted to take up sides and vote. AA doesn't work that way. One vote. Either get right with it or you don't. What a wonderful weekend this has been, and it's a great group of people in a wonderful location celebrating a wonderful way of life for alcoholics who face a deadly disease, for their family members who face the consequences of that, both in their alcoholic loved ones and in their own lives, and in the lives of these blameless children and others that are affected by this thing. And I'm very humbled to be a small part of it and grateful for the many blessings of the weekend. Thank you very much.